here, suppering is here. Life is Skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with a cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park.
The park. That's Tom Lehrer. I'm sure you remember that song. Do you remember it, Richard? It's from your childhood.
I do. I had a disc way back with all these songs, satirical songs. Some of them most politically incorrect. You know, there's one about National Brotherhood Week. That's a great one. I won't try singing any of it because it hammers everyone.
And didn't he write the one about the Table of Elements as well?
He did, yes, that's right.
Go ahead.
Remember
then,
the periodic
time,
table. Oh my God, I can't remember that. No, it's a way of remembering the periodic table, Mendeleev's famous periodic table, but I can't. I did know it once when secondary school, when you were going into the Leaving Cert, you knew this.
Well, we'll get it out and we'll play it before the end of the programme because it's one fascinating song. Anyway, Aina is here, Richard is here, Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland is here. Why are we playing that? Surely it's not spring, but we will be talking about pigeons a little bit later on and how they manage to find their way around the world, because this is something that has bothered and interested people, ordinary punters and scientists and pigeon lovers for years, isn't it, Niall?
Absolutely. Pigeons often are underestimated. People think that they're common or they're vermin or whatever, but they're absolutely fascinating animals. And this homing instinct, it's puzzled people for generations. And also when it comes to all sorts of migratory birds, how do the swallows know how they get back to where they were born themselves? How do the wheatears and the warblers know how to go across the Sahara?
The cuckoos.
They all come back with their mammies and daddies. It's the cuckoos that fascinate me because they go by themselves. They think they're meadow pipits, for God's sake. They never saw a cuckoo in their lives. How do they even know Africa exists? Never mind that they have to go there. Now, they're the ones we should be studying, not pigeons.
Well, we are studying them as well. And how, of course, do the cuckoos know what another cuckoo is when it comes to mating time as well? So it's, fascinating.
Well, how is it that...
It seems to be genetically coded. So we know that with most birds who rely on a song, and a cuckoo relies on a song, most songbirds, though, they have to learn the song from their parents, usually from their father, because with most birds, it's just the male that sings. With the cuckoos, they've never heard another cuckoo singing or making the cuckoo sound before, somehow they genetically know that that's the sound that they're supposed to respond to.
And that's why it's such a two-note thing. There's no complications in it because it's
very
just
simple.
The bare one, everybody is all the same. Yeah.
Same with pigeons cooing as well. That's also genetically coded, so they don't learn that. So a pigeon that was raised in isolation never meets another pigeon, it still makes the correct sound.
You mean the wood pigeon, coo 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 coo, or the coo 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 coo?
Yeah, and the collared dove, all the pigeons, all members of the pigeon family are like that. But a bird like a robin, a classic songbird, if that's raised in captivity, never meets another robin. It tries to sing, but it sings a wonky song that another robin wouldn't be impressed by at all. So
is that a fact?
Yeah.
While I have you on, how long do budgerigars live for?
I had a budgerigar when I was a kid, and it didn't live terribly long. But they are members of the parrot family, so
how terribly long did it live?
he lived for about 5 or 6 years, which is quite short for a budgerigar.
Yeah,
and how long could they live?
Short in the wild.
In the wild, the life is short for most wild birds. I've heard of budgies living up to about 20, 25, some perhaps longer.
In the wild?
Not in the wild.
Not in the cage.
In the cage.
We had a man on yesterday, and he said, "Oh, it's quite old, my budgie." I said, "How old is your budgie?" And he said, 3 or 4 years old. And I said, "That's quite young." And I said, "It's quite old."
I heard you pontificating. The poor man hardly got his questions in for the quiz because you gave him a long lecture on birds in the wild.
No, I didn't give him a lecture, but I was thinking they wouldn't live very long in the wild.
No,
but I haven't been able to find out since how long a budgie lives.
I've definitely heard of budgies
in captivity
living for 20 years.
Recorded
in the wild. In the wild, though, because they're a nomadic species from Australia, what they do is they move around a lot in search of where there's water and the right kind of food. So life is very, very tough for them. So the lifespan in the wild would be a lot shorter. But of course, the ones, there'll be a few lucky few that might live for a decade or more. But
it's unusual, isn't it?
It's unusual. Most parrots and budgies are a member of the parrot family. They live for much longer than other birds.
And it was you who told me, Richard, the longer they live, the longer they live. Birds,
yes,
that is, in the wild.
That's an interesting thing. Talking about migration, if you put a patch over a bird's left eye, it can still find its way home. But if you put the patch over the right eye, it can't.
How do you know that?
Well, this was...
You've done it.
I haven't done it. No, two German researchers back in the 50s discovered this thing. They had robins in a cage in total darkness in Germany. And when it came to migration time, the robins all went down to the end of the cage, which was in the direction they would go. Robins in Germany migrate south. So they all headed to the south end of the cage. At migration time.
Even though they weren't going anywhere.
Even though they couldn't go anywhere because it was they came up against
it. And it was still dark.
It was still dark. And so they put magnetic things around it, big coils, so that they changed the magnetic field to the right to 90 degrees with that of the Earth. And now the robins all went to the west or the east, whichever it was. They didn't go north-south anymore. They went west-east. So in other words, they were responding to magnetic fields definitely. So they were trying to experiment by putting little caps over the eyes so they wouldn't be working around in the dark. So one way, make blot out their eyes then with masks. And they won't... it was noticed then suddenly that you only had to put the mask over the right eye for the bird to become disorientated. It couldn't migrate at all. If you put it over the left eye, it was still doing fine. So there's a strange one, isn't it?
Obviously, one side of the brain has the information and the other side does not.
There's something in the left hemisphere, which the left hemisphere controls the right eye. There's something there that triggers the mechanism. It links to the right eye. So it triggers homing instinct. The other does not.
Do our robins migrate in Ireland?
To a degree. So a lot of our robins would stay in Ireland year-round. They might undertake local migration. They might move a few kilometres. It seems that the females move further than the males do. Some of our females may indeed go to the continent. But what we definitely get in the winter and in the autumn, around now actually, is an influx of robins coming from Britain
robins.
And also from Scandinavia.
Foreign, like that, so the foreign robins. Ones. How do we know this?
You can often they look exactly the same. Well, we know from rings on their legs. You can sometimes tell in the field, though, when you're out looking at them, because the foreign ones tend to be a lot shyer. They don't come so close to people. They're not so trusting of us. So that's one way you can tell.
And they don't come in flocks because robins keep to themselves.
They hate each other, yeah. They're very antisocial.
And get to the most common.
Well, there is one
place
where you would see two robins or more together.
On a Christmas card.
Exactly.
Yeah, imagine having the robin as the bird on the Christmas card. A more belligerent, cross, narky individual. Well,
Brenda got her first Christmas card on Wednesday and it had one singular isolated robin on the front, should I say. Anyway, it was supposed to have been sent by me, but it was sent by a listener on behalf of me because the listener reckoned I was too mean to send it.
Never.
So, yeah. Anyway, Bill, you're still listening. Now, Niall, you're in to talk about the Garden Bird Survey, mm-hmm. Birdwatch Ireland's Garden Bird Survey. You might explain what it is and then tell people how they can get involved.
So the Garden Bird Survey, it's the biggest survey that we do. And when I say we do it, we have people all over the country doing it for us. And what we do is we ask people over a 13-week period from the start of December until the end of February to keep an eye out for the different species of bird that are coming into their garden, or it doesn't have to be a garden, it could be, you know, the area where you work, it could be a local park, anywhere where you have a regularly assessed site you can look at and see the different bird populations there. And we ask you to tell us the highest number of each species that you see at any one time each week, which sounds a little bit complicated, but to give a quick example of that, let's say we're looking at blue tits, a common garden bird that most people, according to our survey, do have in their gardens. So let's say on the Monday of the week you look out and you see one blue tit in your garden. The next day you look out and there are three there all together coming and going from the peanut feeder, let's say.
At the same time.
So you see them coming and going. And then the next day there are only two, and then let's say you don't see any more for the rest of the week. Well, the highest you had at any one time were the three you saw on the Tuesday. So you write in three on your survey form and then you move on to the next week. And you do that for each species. And the thing about that is for people doing the survey, it's a great way to learn more about your garden birds. It really focuses the mind. And I always warn people, it really does become quite addictive, especially if you get some of your friends and family or neighbours doing it, because then you'll want to outdo each other and see if you can beat their score each week. You'll probably find that you spend more time than you ever thought possible staring out the kitchen window looking at the birds. That's a good thing, I think. But the data, of course, that we get from it in Birdwatch Ireland, it really helps us to understand what's going on with our most common birds, because people often think that a conservation organisation like Birdwatch Ireland, we only care about the rare species. But in fact, we can tell a lot more about changes in the environment from what's happening to common species than we can from the rare species.
Yes, you have a table, sort of a beauty competition, if you like, a ranked table of the birds. And number one is always the robin. Now, is that because everybody knows a robin, or is that because genuinely is in 99% of gardens and nothing else is? Because the next one after the robin is which
one? It's the blackbird and then the blue tit.
Yeah,
and they're also very familiar birds to people. Now, it's worth pointing out, first of all, that they're the top three of the table when it comes to how widespread, so it's the occurrence of those birds in Garden, the presence of them in an area. They're not top of the table when it comes to the actual abundance, because, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, with robins, they're very antisocial. So usually you just have one robin in your garden.
At any one time.
During the summer, when they're nesting, you will have two when you have a pair that are nesting, and then their chicks that are there. But this time of year, they're setting up their own territories. They're very solitary, so you just have one. So whereas when it comes to more abundant birds like chaffinches, for example, or also house sparrows, that's a good example, starlings as well, you either have none or you have 20 of them. So they'll be more numerous in general terms. We do find that robins adapt very well to a garden habitat, but also they're one of the few birds, I think, that almost everyone in Ireland can identify. So there's a bit of a bias there, absolutely. But the thing is, in the survey, what we're doing is we're taking account of that. We're assessing the same gardens year after year to see if there's change in the population. And we also, if we see changes in the numbers of these abundant birds and very widespread birds, we know that something's affecting them in that environment. So if we suddenly see the numbers of robins dropping drastically, so in last winter they were present in 99.9% of the gardens that were in the survey, and that's several thousand gardens. If we see next year all of a sudden that they're only in 80% of the gardens, something drastic has happened. But we do know that certain birds would tend to be under-recorded consistently throughout the survey.
Well, now, hang on a second. So yeah. Something drastic has either happened to the populations of the robins, or the people have stopped recording them. Do you take that into account as well?
We do. Well, it would only be based on the forms that people send back to us. It would be kind of unusual if someone was to fill out the form and leave out the robins and record the other birds. Okay. So yes, we do each one afresh each year as well. So
you might have 1,000 people recording one year, and then you might only have 500 the next. Yeah. But of those 500, you would still get 99%.
Precisely. Exactly. So we do it on the percentage basis.
So
like
that would be that would get rid of the fed up factor. But I'm looking there at number 10, which is the wren,
and the one below at the dunnock, number 11.
Yeah, we'll just wren for the moment because we had John O'Halloran from Cork talking about abundance, and he said the most abundant bird of these songbirds in Ireland is the wren.
Definitely.
And yet it's only number 10 here. So I know birds don't
sight and sound, Aina.
Sight and sound,
Now the thing is, of course,
so why is this the case? Do people not see the wren? Can you take a singing of the wren?
When's the last time you saw a wren?
I saw a wren the other day in my garden in London thing. It runs along the wall.
I'll tell you how many wrens I've seen in the last 10 years.
How many?
Two.
Okay.
How many have you heard?
Well, I hear them every year at the Dawn Chorus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's only once.
Once. So I've heard them. Well, in effect, I've heard them over 10 days in the last 10 years, pretty much.
And do you go
I
out?
I don't hear them.
When you're out, do you have no headphones in your ears?
No,
do you
no headphones, no.
You actually have your lugs out.
I think it's worth saying that obviously most people don't know what wrens sound like. And when you do, you
realise... Well, I do, because it's so hot.
It's a very loud sound. Yeah. But the thing is, obviously, I've been bird watching all my life. I'm very attuned to wrens and I see them on a daily basis.
Okay.
And the thing is, most people do
too. I'm around the city all the time.
But the same for the garden bird survey. If you hear a wren singing in the garden and you don't see it, can you send that in as a record?
You're unlikely to hear it singing during the winter months, so that's the thing.
I know,
you
can sing it.
Who are you begging to differ with me or them?
With Kieran, with
less likely.
I had a group out last Sunday in Rogerstown and lo and behold, it turned into a bird song outing.
It's been funny
because the robins were singing merrily, but who was also singing? It was a nice day, but a bit cold, but the wren was at it. Good oh, and several wrens, and we heard lots of wrens. They're singing in a way that they didn't
in
normally.
In fact, Richard, Monica has been on to say during last week she noticed that the birds are chirping more than usual. It feels odd in November to hear them singing cheerily. What's happening?
Well, you know, we've had...
Do they think it's spring?
Well, we're wondering about that because we've had quite a few reports into Birdwatch Ireland over the last 2 weeks or so of birds like blackbirds and song thrushes, particularly singing
blue tits
a bit as well. Mm-hmm. Yes, singing. We haven't had any reports of birds like chaffinches though, and already warblers, chiffchaffs, and things singing. Mm. It's normal for robins to sing at this time of the year. That's perfectly normal. But it is strange when getting an unusual number of song
not
thrushes.
Not normal for wrens.
It's not normal. It does happen, and we're wondering if it's possibly because it's been so mild.
If someone did send in a song record of a wren without having seen it in their garden, that's allowed.
Of course it is. And wrens do call as well. So if you're aware that it's present in your garden and you know it's a bird that you can identify.
Anyway, details.
So yes, you can find all the details on the Birdwatch Ireland website. It's birdwatchireland.ie. You can take part electronically. You can print out the form there too. And we also have a lovely series of articles all about the survey findings over the last few years. So you can see how your garden compares as well.
And an article about the murmurations of starlings as well.
Yes, we do. It's been really really,
which we're making a radio documentary about for January 2nd.
The cover star of our magazine at the moment, the Wings magazine that goes to our members. This is the winter 2014 edition, and we actually at the moment on the Bird of Sharon Facebook page, we have lovely footage that's been posted by one of our members, Rachel Hines. It's a murmuration she saw in County Wexford,
and you're looking for information, aren't you?
We are. We want to know where the starling murmurations are this winter, because go back a century or two ago, it was a feature of the Irish countryside, something that people are really attuned to, and now these enormous flocks wheeling in the sky, although you still do get them in good numbers in some areas, they're nowhere near as widespread or as common a sight as they used to be. So we'd love people to let us know where they are, because it's an absolutely amazing spectacle in nature. I think that the starling is one of our most unfairly criticised birds in Ireland. People think they're noisy and messy and not great to look at, but when you see them in these big murmuration flocks, it's absolutely breathtaking. It's the parallel, the equal of any other spectacular sight you'd see in the world.
Maybe. Well, get in touch with us today. Email mooney@rte.ie, text 51551. Have you seen a murmuration of starlings recently? Tell us where.